As former members of Death Watch ourselves, we can confirm that this is the Bennett Brothers podcast for the Star Wars TV series The Mandalorian, Episode 3, Chapter 11, from Season 2, titled The Heiress. And I'm Jerry Bennett.
And I'm Joel Bennett. I just realized as you were saying all the title, I'm like, oh, Jerry's realizing how long this title he has to say is.
Part 2, colon, exclamation point, ellipses.
Thank you for joining us as we continue to talk about the second season of The Mandalorian. We're going to spoil the heck out of it. So if you haven't seen it, go see it. And go see it, seriously.
Yes, get to the theater and see it.
Well, if you can't get to the theater, you can watch it at your house on Disney Plus. And holy smokes, is it worth watching?
Joel, was this part 3 here the last part of what they were going to put as a movie version out? If they were going to put all first 3 episodes out?
That's a great question. I don't know. I still think it was only going to probably be out in the first episode because they shot with the IMAX camera, yeah. But that's speculation. I haven't seen any confirmation on that, so we don't know. I mean, maybe they might have put out a 3-part trilogy, and I would have went and saw it. You would have went and saw it. We would have went and seen it. But it did not come to fruition, so we get to...
Actually, only I would have seen it.
Yeah, it's true. I would have been locked up.
You ain't going anywhere.
I'm not a part of Death Watch. I'm a part of Life Watch, Jerry.
Jeez. So,
it's a much
You're
more
You're part
pleasant.
Of Air Watch.
So this episode, you know, it's been loved all over the internet. Everyone loves it.
It sounds terrible.
And I think we're going to be doing
Joel
the same
got love
thing.
All over
I
the
love
internet.
It. I know Jerry did not care for this episode.
What?
That's what he said. He said this episode might be the worst one they've done. Jerry still can't get over the frog eggs being eaten. They're like, this is the worst thing ever. I can't believe
this. I don't
this.
Believe that was an
I
issue.
I can't believe the Mandalorian made a misstep and they made the baby eat the frog eggs.
Oh, don't get me started on the boob armor. The boob armor.
Barmer is the
Oh,
call
my
it.
God. Are you aware of that?
No, I was not aware of that.
I almost don't even want to give it any credence. It's a thing. It's a thing. It was actually a thing by one person. This feminist woman came out and, oh my God, the Mandalorians have boob armor. I can't believe it. And it's like, no, they don't. First off, it's accurate to what the show was in 2013. Secondly, it's designed to show that the men and women have different forms. And so it was done to contort to the body so it's comfortable. Third, there's actual photos of female police officers who have different body armor in the chest. It was just this whole thing that this... Luckily, the internet and tweets and Twitters and grams and snaps all came down on this. I don't even want to give her name. She's just this same woman who last season, right at the beginning, came out and said, there's no female parts because she made a snap judgment on the very first episode. And then she got really quiet once Cara Dune showed up. So, look at me! Look at me!
Speaking of women, though, this episode is directed by Bryce Dallas Howard. Who
was the daughter of Ron Howard, famed director for the big success Solo, right?
Yes.
Or are you going to go about how the fact that he directed Lucasfilm's Willow?
Yes.
Or the Willow spinoff TV series for Disney Plus?
Well, I was going to go with her, and she directed an episode last season, and she's also on the behind the scenes from last season. Talking
she's one of the directors, yeah.
About what she learned on the show. And
what was her greatest acting role? Was it in Spider-Man 3 as... Gwen Stacy, or was it as the blind girl in The Village?
I can't imagine those are her only two acting roles.
Well, there's that episode of Black Mirror where she's losing all her points. Popularity points.
I'm going to have to say that this is not the best movie she's been in, but I liked her in the Jurassic World movie.
Oh, that's right. I guess that was a film. Yeah, she's got another one of those coming out.
I also liked her in Help. She's good in Rocket Man.
Help, the Beatles movie from 1965.
She was in Arrested Development, Jerry.
Yes. Yes, with her dad doing the narration.
So, no, it's...
Focus, Joel. Why are you leaving The Mandalorian? We should be talking about Frog Lady. We should be talking
Frog
about
Lady.
Baby Yoda.
Yeah, you know what? Last episode, and I know everyone was happy, you never mentioned the name that you created.
Baby Yoda!
You never mentioned it. You went. We stuck with the child and the baby.
I'm not saying the other one, though. I'll go with the child. Do you think that they've made a mistake not naming this puppet? So now that the baby Yoda thing has latched on, that no matter what they go, if they kind of at the end, it's like, his name is Tim. It's not going to resonate.
Have you met the baby Tim?
Tim Oda?
I think it's, I think it's fine. I don't think people are going to be upset, be like, oh, you changed.
Do you
the
call
name.
Him Din or do you call him Mando?
I call him both. Because that's what they call him in the universe.
But don't call him late for dinner.
But they've never called it. They've never called it Baby Yoda in the universe. So
no, God no.
So this episode actually only 35 minutes. That's probably the only flaw of this episode I see is that it's 35 tight. Minutes.
Barely versus, any room to breathe.
Versus the
at
first
all.
Episode, which is 56 minutes.
54.
Okay.
I don't know much, but I have that number in my. Also, I don't know much.
Yeah, that's true.
But we established that I don't know much.
I don't think we need to heap praise on this episode. I think we both liked it a lot, and I think we should get into it. And if we change our minds, unless you have more to say about this episode before we start.
I was very happy through the whole episode. It was just intense. I still had my moments I was worrying about eggs, but luckily that never happened. But yeah, it was all the way around episode. It just made me want to go like, that's it. Keep going. I want to live in this world visually.
This show, so good. Let's get into it.
Joel,
let's get into
I agree it. With you 100%. It is the absolute second best TV show on television right now.
Rick and Morty is your number one.
Yeah,
isn't
it is. It's my number one. I'm rewatching one. That because they've got it on now where you can listen to all the cusses and it just brings it so much better. I can't help it, man. I swear to God, the Rick and Morty show is incredible. This is no. Don't get me wrong. It's really, really close. This is an incredible television show.
This is the best show on television. This is, and it doesn't even have to have a long-running plot. This show could go for 13 years and never have one long arc.
Because the baby doesn't age is what you're saying.
And they could change out the person behind the helmet.
And have.
It doesn't need, there's no like overarching story outside of him trying to now find where to take this baby. That's it.
Do you think the fact that they're now crossing over with the Battlestar Galactica universe is going to be a detriment?
What the frack?
Close that freaking door.
It's in the freaking walls.
Okay, so say goodbye. That's it. That's the last of the people listening. They've gone nuts.
All right, here we go. We're going to start this episode out. It's called The Heiress. Did you think anything about that when you first saw the title?
Not when I first saw the title, no. Obviously, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that the heiress is referencing the character of Bo-Katan, who theoretically should be the ruler of Mandalore.
Yes. Unless the child is an heiress of some sort. And it's a female child the whole time. We had no idea.
Hey, since I watched this episode, I went back and rewatched the final four episodes of Clone Wars.
Did you?
Yeah, because it's so good. It's just so good.
How? When did you have time to do that?
Well, there's nothing going on right now because everything's locked down. So I had time this Saturday to watch it. And then I also watched the final episode of Rebels again, just to see Ahsoka Tano in there for all of 30 seconds.
So we start this episode. We see the Razor Crest. It's taking place fairly shortly after the past episode, we assume. You know, it's not been years since the past episode, but we don't know exactly the time length, but it's... They're taking a nap, so I'm assuming it's fairly recent.
Looks like they're coming up on Earth when I first saw it.
Have you, when you see the Razor Crest, do you get strong Serenity vibes from it?
It's so funny you say that. In this episode, when it's landing on the planet, Debbie, my wife, was just like, oh my God, it's Serenity. It's Firefly.
Yeah, and it's coming from behind for me. I know Serenity on Firefly has the big...
No, it's different enough.
It's different enough. But
this shot, in this sequence, it did. It's funny that you mentioned that. The other thing about the Razor Crest is it feels, and it's supposed to feel this way, like a ship that was created in the prequel trilogy. It's very slick looking. It's simple. But obviously now it's aged. It's sticking around for so much longer.
It's been beat to hell.
Yeah, exactly. So but I'm saying its design is very reminiscent of that Naboo starfighters, that time period, and that's what it's supposed to be actually. And that's why in the one previous episode he mentions how it's like, well, it's kind of grandfathered in. It's an older ship and everything.
Yeah, good call. Good point. We go to the planet of Trask. This is a water planet. A bug planet. No, it's a water planet.
Are we going to talk about the descent into the planet?
We are. I'm just mentioning a little bit about the planet because they're descending onto it. So we're going to Trask. It's a water planet. They have a black market port that's on there. and we'll as we get that, this is, it looks like it's primarily inhabited by aquatic species.
Two in particular.
Yeah, at least at this port, there is the...
Two species from the planet Mon Calamari. Yes,
the Quarans and the Mon Calamarians.
The Quarans are Quarans, initially Quellans, whatever. They are Quarren.
Squid-faced.
Yes, I was just going to say that. That's what the package said in Return of the Jedi action figures. The first time we ever saw one of these creatures was on the Jabba's palace and on the sand barge. They were called squid faces. And Absolutely. Since then, we've seen them in the comics and, more importantly, in the cartoon series, Clone Wars and Rebels, where they always seem to go against the Mon Cal race, which is always gone more towards the rebel side and the resistance side. So they've had conflicts in the past in general, but that's where we've seen. And they were both that were introduced in Return of the Jedi.
Yes. This is what we're going to see on the planet. And also we have the frog species now. So that's another species that gets added into the,
well, the two of them,
aquatic species. I mean, obviously there's fish that we've seen in the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
Primarily in episode one, we get to see there's always a bigger fish. We get to see there's a lot of fish species, but this is these are famous humanoid-esque species. So we were going to talk about the landing, Jerry. Tell us about it.
Well, first off, I read online there was a great Uber joke. I don't know if you've seen that out there, where it's like the frog lady's like rating the one-star ride. he kept crashing, hitting things.
It took longer than it was supposed to.
His pet kept eating my eggs.
You got me kidnapped on another planet.
Yeah, one star. No, it was an intense sequence. I was, again, as soon as Din actually goes, get up here and hold on to this, and she sets the eggs down, and then they cut to the baby, look at the eggs, and I'm like, he's going to eat all those damn eggs. Stop eating the eggs. You're making me paranoid about it. But he didn't. And we had this incredibly intense landing sequence, which right to the very end is funny until all of a sudden it goes, bloop, goes into the water.
Falls in the water, laughed out loud. That was really funny. Now, someone watching this picked this up, because I saw this on Reddit, and then, or it was on Twitter or something, and then it was confirmed by Bryce Dallas Howard. This is an homage to Apollo 13. There are actually certain scenes that are kind of shot for shot with Apollo 13, and I saw them played back.
You mean
back.
Directed by Ron Howard, her
directed
father?
Directed by her dad, Ron Howard, yes. Yeah. Like the fact that someone out there in the world noticed that connection and put it together is quite amazing. You can't get past anything anymore. Anything. There's like nothing that you can hide from an audience that they
won't
figure out.
People got time.
Yeah, right? And people got great memories. So that was an homage to Apollo 13, which she has confirmed.
Let me ask you a question here. So obviously they get the ship and it crashes in the water, and then they lift it back out of the water, which we get to see that vehicle that has the AT-AT legs and the sound effects, so it's part of the in-universe sound as it's lowering it onto the landing platform.
We've seen that machine in the Solo movie.
Yes, we did. Good call.
I want to talk about that more in a second.
I was going to say, though, when the ship is just beat to hell here, at no point, though, do I worry about the ship, because in the first season, right off the back, we saw the ship dismantled almost entirely by the Jawas and then put back together. So in my mind, it doesn't matter how much damage. Like last episode when the spider creature was punching holes through it, I'm like, yeah, they can fix it. They can fix it, because they've already established that this thing just can keep getting rebuilt. So I never feel like, oh, well, that's the end of the Millennium Falcon this time. It's like, no, it'll keep going.
So this AT-AT crane thing that they used to pick up, the Razor Crest, I think you pointed this out to me or something. We went on a family trip to California years back.
Yes.
And if you live in California,
San Francisco specifically,
they have these huge cranes for docks, for boats.
Lifting out cargo, shipping containers.
Where George Lucas got the idea.
When he was driving on the bridge, going to Lucasfilm or wherever he was doing, he would always see those on the water, and that was supposedly his inspiration for the AT-ATs.
And if you see these cranes, they actually look more like these crane creatures than they do these crane AT-ATs versus the regular AT-ATs, which I thought, another nice little homage to George Lucas in this world. And they make sense. Like, it's a really a piece of material piece of construction equipment that makes sense.
And actually, because they were trying to honor George Lucas, they asked him if they wanted to let his son name him, and his son named him Kookakookoopoo. That was another thing. Thank you, George.
I'm going to talk more about that in a second. so they get the ship out of the water. He's going to get it fixed. We have more touching than it had any right to be.
The reunion of the frogs.
Yeah, the frog lady reunites with her significant
people other. Online in the Twitter tweet twat universes just lost their mind. They're so happy that the frogs people made it.
It was really touching. Like that had no right to be as touching as it did, but for some reason these puppet creatures like getting together, it was really heartwarming. So that was
Joel, who played the new frogman?
It was played by someone significant too, which is not actually someone significant, but
somebody with a connection to another Star Wars movie.
Hold on, I had his name and now I don't have it anymore.
You had 7 jobs.
This is the worst.
Was it somebody who was in the TV series Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. perhaps? Was it Fitz?
It was Fitz.
Oh, thank you.
No, it was puppeted by John Cameron Mitchell.
Oh, him.
John Cameron Mitchell, I famously know him from Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which is a musical. So,
okay.
And a movie. So he's the guy behind it, so I don't know much more than that.
He's the man behind The Mandalorian.
Yes, not The Mandalorian.
Okay.
Okay, so we have them, we find out that Mando is being watched.
Okay, this confused the heck out of me. Like, so we see this actress who, in the trailers and teasers, we see this image when we're hearing the voiceover of the armor talking about Jedi. And this person is in what looks like a Jedi robe. And so I'm thinking, well, this is a Jedi-like character watching him, is what I'm thinking at this point because of all of those mitigating factors. And it doesn't even dawn on me until late in the episode who this actually was, because I was so caught up in all of the details and everything that's being thrown at me that towards the end I was like, hey, wait, they didn't deal with that Jedi that we saw watching earlier. And then my son had to reference, he's like, you know, that was, and I was like, oh, and it just, the light came on.
Oh, yeah.
Did that mess with you at all or no?
I didn't even think about it till the second viewing. Like, oh, it's her. It's
okay. So it wasn't just me. No, I guess it's just old people. Good to know.
It's just old people.
Which one of them using their magical finger movement things? Yeah.
So they go into a bar here, and they gets there. There's some really unappetizing looking chowder being poured out of a vacuum cleaner
with a big old alien bug inside it.
A squid thing that attacks the baby, which is fantastic.
If people want to connect this and say it's like a facehugger alien, just like when he ate the egg in the last episode, and I say, it's a stretch! I don't buy it.
So this whole scene is leading up to Mando finds some of the Kurrens to take him
Quarren.
Out. Quarren. Is it Quarren?
Yeah, do we know who the voice? Because the voice sounded really familiar, but I could not read. I just said everything I looked online was like, we can tell you who played him. And then they go like, well, these are the puppeteers. But I wanted to know the voice arcs were anybody. But I guess they were not of relevance yet.
So so the frog guy says, hey, you need to go into the bar. And then the bar guy is like, you're going to talk to these Quarrens.
Did you catch how he got him to do that? Did you see what Mando gave the Mon Cal bar owner some Mon Calamari currency. Do you remember where he got that?
I believe it was episode 1.
No, it was maybe it was 1. Yeah. So that's actually a reference back to that. That's why he's got that Mon Calamari flam or whatever it's called.
So they're going to go onto a sailing ship, and we get a great shot here. I'm not sure how they did this shot.
As the music is playing, the theme.
Yeah. They get this where they come up high and then they go in low, and then in seamless transition to them on the boat talking. It's quite astounding. And I know they're using the void to do a lot of this stuff, but I don't know how they get those huge wide shots to come in. It was pretty spectacular.
It was really awesome. I watched the second viewing. I was really paying attention to like the water and how the connection and the scale that, whatever the percentage is that they're shooting indoors, whether it be 90% or 75%, you know, whatever it is. And I'm sure it's, you know, that's what they're touting a lot, but they are still shooting things regular as well. Just the environment and realizing how much really isn't there and how much you never get the impression that this is, you know, claustrophobic indoor. And I often think about this, Joel. It's like when I recently was watching something special effect wise from like the 2009, 2010, whatever it was, and it was a CG-ish effect. And I remember at the time going, wow, this is impressive. But because the technology keeps advancing, it's like, oh, that doesn't work as well as it did then. The same way things at that time didn't work as well when we looked at stuff from 1999 or wherever, when sure. you're looking at Gummy Blade or whatever you want to be looking at. And I keep thinking, like, are we going to look back 5 to 10 years from now and go like, oh, those shots in this show, or is this perfect?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite perfect. You got to also remember that you are looking back and seeing bad stuff, but there is some great special effects. And Jurassic Park is the prime example of computerized, not some of the shots during the day, but like the T-Rex stuff is perfect.
Yeah, well, taking the, if not the greatest, one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. So you're always mm-hmm. working with, you know, there's a reason they're that good.
Yeah, I mean, there's other movies, I'm not going to recall them off the top of my head, but there are other older movies that use special effects that you hadn't, computer effects, visual effects, that you have no idea, like, that was even a part of it, and you're just, like, blown away by it. So I get the idea,
what you're saying is this is going to stand the test of time. I think it will also, but I'm always hesitant going like,
of course,
are we going to see more technology in the future that's going to be even smoother so that all of a sudden we're going to see this and look and go like, now I see that the camera is limited because it can't be handheld or something. You know, I wonder about those where we'll feel like looking back at Back to the Future 2, which, you know, when there's the sequence of Marty McFly next to himself and it was incredibly impressive. And it's like they've got the robotic camera that was able to redo the same shot over and over again. And we can look at that now and they can do that same effect, but with have a free-forming camera. So we can't, you know, we don't even know, you know. So I wonder if it's going to be one of those scenarios. I'm just speaking about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. And I would say if the most important thing is if it doesn't look right now, it's like if it doesn't look right now, it's not going to look right in the future.
Are you talking about right now?
Yeah, right now.
Okay, right now.
No, well, not then, right now.
Okay.
We miss then. So no, if we, like for instance, Star Wars Rogue One, which we love, and we love seeing
Grand Moff Tarkin.
But when you watch it, it's just a little off. It's unless they work on it, it's not going to get better as we get further along. That scene, that idea of that effect, though, of bringing people back from the dead and doing that, that's going to get better. And so we're going to see the comparison between the two. So it's just, you know.
So you're saying they can do a better Dobby, the house elf, in the Harry Potter movies?
I mean, those movies, some of the special effects.
But Gollum be better?
Gollum is great, but you also look at, like, Harry Potter, the first one, and the troll that's in the bathroom is terrible. It's terrible. It's subjective, and I realize that, and it's time and money, but I think these shots are pretty damn perfect. So I don't know. So we're going to see a creature called a mammacore.
Is that cage with the water in there? Does that mean that this vehicle that they're in is huge and has a huge underbelly, or is that just an opening to the outside water?
I'm assuming that mammacore is on the ship.
Because the ship looks tiny, and yet we're supposed to assume
it has. But it could be deep.
It must be.
Or
it
could be a net around this thing. There's a whole lot of options there. But if it wasn't there, then the thing would have just eaten the fish that it was.
Yeah, that's the question. It's hard to get a sense of scale when we're looking at a small ship, but we're seeing one that must be, you know, several stories deep in a way. The impression. So I wasn't sure.
I'm like, it's a sailing ship, like. Can it, like, fly, too? Can it, like, zoom out of the water? Like, that seems like something, like, any spaceship should be able to be a sailing ship.
Well, exactly. I mean, we're dealing with the fact that the child is on a little vehicle that's floating. So it's, like, anti-gravity. Well, he was on a thing that's floating, because that brings us up to a scene where we're going to be seeing the end of the floating cradle, which, in a way, it tells me that they're going to have to move the storyline forward, because now he's going to have to travel differently, or they know that they don't need it again, or he'll just get a different one.
So we have this. So the mammacore is a new entry into the Star Wars universe. It kind of looked a little bit like a Sarlacc mouth. It's just a big creature that eats things. And I love that I didn't see this coming, but they obviously trick Mando, Din, and they hit the carrying pod into the water, Or it gets eaten by the thing and goes underwater. I love that Mando doesn't hesitate and just dives right in after it. Like, there's something.
What did
about
he
that.
Do differently when he dove in to get the creature versus what we end up seeing later when a different Mandalorian jumps in and has no problem? You see some shooting underwater.
It could be the armor is different.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
It could be, you know, they're used to, maybe she's a better swimmer than he is.
Do you think the helmet he wears is airtight? Because he kind of comes up out of the waters.
It's definitely not airtight. I think it should be airtight because can he go into outer space with it? I know he can go into upper atmospheres. Anyways, I enjoyed Mando diving in. And then when all seems lost, we get three freaking Mandalorians coming to the rescue. And for some reason, as much as I liked seeing the Mandalorians in the first season, this was when this looked amazing watching them come in. I don't know if it's the blue tint to their outfits or whatnot. Those outfits, it just looked much cooler.
All right, so let's break down, before we go any farther, let's break down to these the three Mandalorians we see here showing up. Joel, I'll let you take the lead on this because you got stuff written in front of you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't have too much written in front of me, but we have – I'm gonna save Bo-Katan for last. We have Casca Reeves.
Yes.
Who is – this is her first introduction into the Star Wars canon.
This is also the woman we see earlier in the what we think are Jedi robes but are not.
Yes, she's – played by, I didn't write the name down of the actress, but the actress is a WWE superstar. So
I thought her name was Sasha something. That's her wrestling name is that.
Yes. So she's a WWE superstar. Looks great. Great stuff. I mean, you can get really into the details. Like, she's a part of the Night Owls because she has that insignia on her.
The Night Owls is a group of what is, we are told in Clone Wars, is all female Mandalorians. But is that not true anymore because of the next actor who's there?
Sasha Banks is her name, by the
okay,
way.
Okay, okay. I got her
name. The next one.
That's her wrestling name, by the way.
Played by Simon Cassandes.
This is Axe Woves or
Axe
Woves?
Axe Woves. Fun little fact. Jerry maybe foreshadowed this, and I don't know if you even knew this. Axe Woves, the name, was made by George Lucas.
Ah,
he was on set one day, and he came up with the name for Axe Woves. And the reason we know that is because the actor, Simon, he tweeted out that he heard this story from Jon Favreau that George Lucas came up with this on set. So, Axe Woves. I think it was supposed to be wolves, but George Lucas had a baby around him, and the baby was like, woos, woos. And he's like, oh, that's perfect, Axe Woves.
Yeah, his armor also has no insignia of the Night Owls.
So he might not be part of the Night Owls. He might be part of Death Watch or something other than that. Yeah. And then we have
the actor who played him was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
And this is which we have another actor coming up later who's also from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But
Sonal Bakshi. I can't believe I forgot to write that down.
Yeah. He was in something else too, and I forgot what it was, but he was
I enjoyed him immensely. Well, he's in Quantum of Solace.
That's it.
I enjoyed him immensely in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought his character was fantastic in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
We should do a podcast on that.
Yeah, right. And then our final character was Bo-Katan Kryze, played by Katie Sackhoff of Battlestar Galactica fame.
Starbuck.
So this is big nerdy moment here. So if you have not watched Clone Wars or Rebels, we're going to kind of fill you in a little bit on this.
Fill away.
So this character made her appearance in the Clone Wars animated television show. She is a Mandalorian, as Jerry mentioned earlier. She was an Aera. She was supposed to be she ends up uniting all of Mandalore. She's the one with the dark saber. And then stuff happens where she's going to lose that. We're going to find out all about that. But
her sister, she is the younger sister of Satine, who was in the charge of Mandalore. She was the one in charge, who also had probable romantic relationship with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And this was shown in the Clone Wars. And in fact, he says, you know, if you had asked me, I would have left the order for you. So there's a connection with that. And the character of Satine actually gets killed in the Clone Wars TV series by none other than Darth Maul, and it revolves around the dark saber. And there's and another thing I didn't realize, I kind of knew it from the past, but Katie Sackhoff did the voice of Bo-Katan on the show, so that is fantastic. Which we've only seen that done one other time before, and that was during the character he was in Rogue One, Forrest Whitaker.
But Forrest Whitaker did the voice of Saul Guerrero.
He did.
On the animated, I didn't think he did the voice of that.
If he didn't do it in the very first, they had him do it in the later episodes. In the Rebel.
Can you name the third character, Jerry, who appeared in the cartoons first, the animated series first, and then made a live action?
Are you talking about Boba Fett from the holiday special? Star Wars holiday special?
You got me there. But I'm going to talk about Clone Wars Rebels.
A character we saw on those before we saw them live action.
We did see them live action.
I don't know. Which one are you thinking of?
Chopper.
Oh, jeez.
I know, right? Chopper appeared in Rogue One in the background.
Yes. Yes, he did.
So Bo-Katan, she was the voice actress. She looks just like her character in the animated series, which is normally pretty damn rare. I always think of the TV show Archer, where
Mallory.
What's that?
Where Archer's mom, Mallory.
Well, I always think of who does the voice, voice of Archer. That is John.
Yeah, Bob's Burger.
Yes. Well, he made a quote saying, you know, with everyone on Archer, every actor or an actress looks like their part except for him. Like, they could make a movie and all their characters could play their part, but he's like, I couldn't play Archer because I don't look anything like Archer.
That's true. John Benjamin.
Yes, thank you.
Okay,
and
so
it's true. So like she looks just like your character.
Let's bring that up, though. There's a point with that. Okay, yes. So the fact that she looks like that character, this is all this stuff comes out about her age. So Bo's age in comparison to in the timeline where we're at, because she looks, the actress Katie Sackhoff is 40 years old. The character of Bo-Katan should be at minimum late 40s, if not early 50s. She should be, because mm-hmm. unless she's like 1920 during, I mean, even Clone when we Wars. See, yeah, and even when we see her again in Rebels, you know, she looks very similar, so she's like 12 years old. It's 12 years later, or actually, no, it's 18. It's 17, 18 years later, because Rebels ends right before Luke, and that's 18 years later. So now, again, that's basically saying if everybody is all human and all humans have the same age thing, we don't know. I mean, you could easily write in the dialogue, since we know that Wookiees can live to be 600 years old and Yoda can live to be 900 and something. So we could say, like, well, people who are on this planet don't age the same as whatever the human age equivalent is in that world. The other part about that comes down to is, let's say that Bo-Katan is 10 years younger than her sister Satine. So she's got an older sister. Satine was in love with Obi-Wan Kenobi. People can bring up to the mm-hmm. point of, like, if you look at Bo-Katan and you look at Obi-Wan Kenobi back then, and then you look at them now, it's like Obi-Wan Kenobi aged really badly. Now, people have said that could be because he was on Tatooine and it's a harder planet, which is nice. You could also say that if you look at both Obi-Wan Kenobi, Luke Skywalker, and Princess Leia, they all are aged so much more than they should be than everybody else. Like, they look like Leia, Princess Leia, Carrie Fisher was only 60 when she passed, which was very young, but she projects so much older in that movie. And Mark Hamill with the beard projects so much older. And of course, you know, and people wondered, like, well, maybe all three of these are tied with the Force and the Force drains your life. I don't know if that's, you know, that's one thing.
When Emperor Palpatine?
Yeah.
He's only 33 years old. Look how old he looks, Jerry.
Exactly. I'm only 18. No, but for example, in A New Hope, doing the age of what Obi-Wan Kenobi is supposed to be based on Ewan McGregor's age when he was making the prequels, Obi-Wan Kenobi is supposed to be 57 years old, and Alec Guinness played him there, and he was 63. So it's close in there, and it's following that, but
They play him so much older than 63.
That's my point. And they're also...
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yes.
A long time. It's been like 20 years. Like, get out of here.
It's been 18 years. So I just wanted to bring that up, that this whole age thing, people are like using this as a point of reference. They're showing, because again, you're taking cartoon characters and bringing them forward. And the fact that, you know, obviously we see people all around us. Some people we see near us and they go like, wow, you look fantastic. And other people you go, oh my God.
Thanks. I think that was a dig at me. I appreciate it.
No. Yeah. No.
No. So, but the fact that we got this actress to play this part and it can all ties in is just mind blowing. It's fantastic. So
do you think that because they got her and she was the voice actor, they should do that with everybody else who was a cartoon, like I don't know, like say Ahsoka Tano, that famous actress who did the voice for the last 15 years. She's an actress. Should she do it, or are they going to just
they're
say,
well,
she,
someone else.
They're going to replace her because she's not as well known as Katie Sackhoff, which is a shame. Really,
it is. I mean, they took Anakin Skywalker's voice and they made him a different character, so they could do stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you sign up to do an audio.
I think they just looked at. They looked
I think
at. They looked
got
at. They
real
they,
lucky.
Yeah, they like. Well, Katie Sackhoff wants to do this, and Forrest Whitaker came back over here to do that. I think they looked and said, like, oh.
I think they got. Yeah, I think they got real lucky. I don't. I don't see that happening too many other times. That's you know, it would be cool if it happens more, but you know, it is what it is. I think we got a bonus with this. So continuing on with the story, we find out you know the child gets saved. They, like Jerry mentioned, the floating pod gets destroyed. And then they take off their helmets.
Before that, we get a parallel scene when they open up the gate and she reaches down and says, take my hand to pick up Din out of the water. And it's very reminiscent of when he was a child and the doors opened up and we see one of the Mandalorians from Death Watch reach out. Speaking of Death Watch.
So they take off their helmets. And Din reacts. He's like, where did you get that armor? Because he doesn't know that this is sort of a different sect.
And he just had an episode, two episodes earlier, where he found the Boba Fett armor, and he's like, nope, you're not a Mandalorian, give me that armor.
Yeah, so this is a, sort of a different sect, and this explains why in the cartoon they take their helmets off and why he's so against taking his helmet off is because he's a part of...
It's not even a different sect. I mean, this is how Mandalorians are supposed to be, but what Din Djarin is he's called a Children of the Watch, as in Death Watch, as in a almost... It's basically the other one. You heard, like, they did that funny cuss afterwards when they realized who he was.
Yes.
It's like a cult. It's basically a cult.
Yes, the Dank Ferrick is the cuss they use, and I've looked at this. They've used it a couple times actually, and
it was used in the first episode this season.
And I think that is what I'm speculating. That is it might be like
a name George Lucas came up.
Possibly, it might be like a god that they worship or something like that. The way you would use like the Lord's name in vain. I think that's what this feels.
I think it's
like
son of a bitch.
It could be. It's just such an odd one, Dank Ferrick. So yeah, so Din's a child of the watch. Din takes the baby. He just flies away. He's like, I'm out of here. And then we get to see the reverse shot of the other three flying away as the ship blows up in the water, which is great. We're back on the port docks.
We see an Imperial freighter off in the distance, or we're going to be seeing it, I should say. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I jumped ahead because there's this little confrontation.
Yeah,
which
Din
is
confronted by
it's almost like a second scene. Like, you didn't need that scene. He'd already had the scene where he was rescued by them, and then they kind of come in and rescue him again.
Okay,
I liked it,
yeah,
but
okay
it didn't
it.
Do anything that they didn't already just do in the scene before that.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Good point. Yeah.
But we see the Imperial freighter, which we first see in Phantom Menace on Tatooine when they're walking into... the Mos Eisley or Mos Espa, whenever they were walking. We've seen that ship there, or a variation of.
So we're in the bar. We're back in the bar. Bo-Katan is talking about taking back Mandalore. Casca eats, and she has that little squid thing, like, hit her in the face, and then, like, sucks it in. And I'm like, that's disgusting. Come on. Like, who eats like that? Like, imagine eating something and it, like, hits you in the face and, like, is holding on to dear life as you're chewing it.
I'm sure there's people who eat octopus live. I've seen that.
Terrible.
Ugh. Should get our food at a wet market. What could go wrong?
Yeah. And then they talk about the mission. They talk about this mission that they're going to do. They're going to steal some guns. This is a black market port. The guns have been taken from Mandalore.
That's what they're telling Din anyways.
Yes, and they want the stuff back.
And then he goes, hey, if you help me, then I'll help send you towards where the Jedi are at. That's the arrangement that they make here.
Exactly.
And so they go on Din's ship, and they're actually looking over there at it. And I noticed the second time, I'm like, since they're sitting on the ship, they should be able, he should be able to look down and see the repair work or lack thereof on his ship here. Because, you know, there's the reveal at the end where he's like, that's all you did?
I didn't know they were on his ship.
Yeah, that was his ship that they were sitting on. And it actually looks like the...
I thought they were in the bar.
No, they were on the ship.
Because she has the chowder.
That's a different part of the scene. But then they go and they're actually sitting and it's like sunset outside and they're on the ship. And the wrestler one, she's kind of like lying down on one while the other ones are sitting up higher on it.
Oh, you're talking about, okay. They were actually, yes, they were sitting on.
On
that
top
was the,
of
ship,
the ship
though?
Hmm. Yeah, that was his ship.
Okay. So he's going to
first
pawn
he's
off,
get, yeah,
yeah, he's
got to
pawn
child.
Off the child at the frog people's home.
I was worried about the egg still.
I like this moment here, though, when he's looking and he sees one of the eggs hatch. And there's a, like, I took it as it's a moment of connection, like, oh, here's life being born.
Yeah, but we see him eat life all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but I see this one as being like, okay, this there's a little bit more of a connection. He's growing up a little bit. I don't know. I could be completely wrong with that. And then we go on to where we get this takeoff of the Imperial Gazanite freighter.
Nice. Good name.
And they fly up to go onto it, which is a great, this is a great, great shot. This is one of my favorite shots of the whole series, where the four Mandalorians fly and they land on there and they start fighting all the stormtroopers.
All good stuff.
We get introduced to a character, the Imperial Captain, who's played by
Titus
Welliver.
Another Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. connection. Yes.
He is fantastic.
But he's also, this is the third major actor from Deadwood, because he was on Deadwood with from the first two episodes, where I told you we had basically the bartender who was the Weequay and the Boba Fett guy whose name was escaped, the Marshal. So yes. This is actually another Deadwood character, as well as an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. character.
Speaking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the two other, the pilot and the security author, Alexander Wraith and Philip Alexander, are also from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I was hoping you'd figure something there, because I couldn't.
The pilot is, he played Agent Anderson for like 7 episodes. He was also on the miniseries Slingshot. And then Philip Alexander played Joe from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Not Joey, but Joe. Joey the Melter.
He's the security officer. So all three of these people on here are from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Very cool.
Which is, you know, it's a nice little, it's fun, since we did a Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, if you're not familiar with it.
Okay.
And so the Mandalorians are fighting their way through the ship, which is awesome stuff here.
We
awesome
get a cool shot of heat vision from their point of view, so they can see.
My favorite part in this whole battle here is when they finally get trapped
in the cargo control area.
The deck officer, yeah, the cargo control area, and then you get this moment where it just cuts on Titus Welliver's face.
It does a camera zoom in, like,
yeah, and it's like,
where are you, or where are they?
And then out the back. That was beautiful. Really awesome. It was so well done.
The music
so
here is, because we're back in this Imperial hallway situation like that, they went back to the music they used in the first season when they were on the prison ship. And it's got more of a, instead of a big dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, it's got this techno-tron-y new age sound. And I really love it. Love it.
So they get the weapons, but they're going to go further and try to take the rest of the ship. And this is the point where Din is not happy with what's going on. You change the rules. You change the...
That's happened to him so many times.
Oh, yeah, of course. He was just... they're going to take the ship. The Imperial Captain, meanwhile, is talking on a hologram to Moff Gideon.
On a holoscreen.
We haven't seen since last season. And he's like, we're going to do it for the Empire.
Long live the Empire.
And this is where the Imperial Captain kills the two other crew members.
And he's going to crash it because he realizes that these thieves are the same ones. And he figures, well, there's no point. We can at least eliminate them. People are questioning, why would the captain or the commander kill himself or kill his people? And that's basically because everybody who's still in the Empire at this point, this is 5 years after the Battle of Jakku, which was right after Jedi. Anybody who's still there, they're a fanatic. They're in it for the, they're not doing it for... They're the ones who are like, the Empire is the only way. So that was to show that Moff Gideon has surrounded himself with people who are just fanatics. And that's what he is. We also get Bo-Katan, basically, when she was changing the terms of the deal. She kind of, I don't know if it was sarcastic or not at the end, when she goes, this is the way. And it's like, do you think that when they use the phrase, this is the way, that's just part of the Children of the Watch?
That's my understanding. It's just
saying it sarcastically, because she says it again at the end.
The same way he says, may the force be with you. Like, he doesn't believe that. He's just
saying. So you're saying that they just say this is the way to him, because that's not something that they would normally say.
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
Because
she says it here, and I took it as sarcasm.
I could be wrong on this.
I know, and I took it here as sarcasm, but doesn't she say it again at the very end of the episode?
She does.
And I didn't take it as sarcasm then, so I wasn't sure.
And he says it back to her.
Yeah. This is the way?
So we get a great scene here where there's a couple stormtroopers left on the ship, which I was like shocked. I was like, oh, there's some more stormtroopers.
They have repeater rifles here.
Yeah, and so they can't get through. The ship's crashing, and this is when Din sacrifices his armor, I guess, his bulletproof armor.
I don't think he sacrificed anything. He still has it.
It's getting damaged. Every time it gets hit, it gets damaged. And he throws some...
Really? Because it looks exactly the same.
Well, yeah, of course it looks exactly the same, but I mean, it's...
Versus in the first...
I think they talked about this in the first season, like the integrity of it.
Well, yeah, that was that, because he had some... cheap version. This stuff is pure. This is the good stuff.
Well, he blows up the remaining stormtroopers.
Yes.
They break in. They're able to level out the ship right before it hits the ground.
Capture the captain.
The captain, Bo-Katan, is looking for the Darksaber.
Which, again, and she's like, he's like, who has it? He's like, you know, if you don't have it, you know he does. Before the guy basically takes a suicide electronic pill or something.
Yes. Awesome.
Where
awesome.
Are the Jedi?
So Din is now being told that the
he's
Jedi,
gotta get out of
he's
got
to go to the city of Caladan on yeah. the forest planet of Krovis.
Of course.
And there, and probably the best part of the episode, I think I might have said that like four times
already. Yes, that's a lot.
The best part of the episode, he goes,
there you'll find
Ahsoka Tano. Boom! That's we kind of know she was going to be on this show, but it's great to get a name drop.
If you don't know who Ahsoka Tano is, well, there's a chance because not everybody knows it. Ahsoka Tano is a character that was introduced in the Star Wars Clone Wars movie, if you remember that, years ago.
Which is not canon, technically. So.
It is.
The Clone Wars, you're not talking about, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the Gendry.
No, not those. I'm talking about the movie. Remember they released it as a movie first. And actually in the movie version, Christopher Lee did the voice of Dooku and Sam Jackson did the voice of Mace Windu. So there was even more continuity there.
It's good they didn't switch that up. That'd been awkward.
Yeah. So the character of Ahsoka Tano was brought on board as a Padawan to
Anakin
Skywalker. And over the course of the 3 years in between episode 2 and episode 3, she was his Padawan. We saw her grow up, go from a kind of a teenage character, kind of annoying, to a very competent Jedi, to eventually leaving the Jedi Order and going on her own way, and she survives at Order 66, which is incredible. And she's not technically a Jedi, even though she is. We eventually see her again in Rebels, and at the end of the Rebels show, she's basically going to look for a character, not Kanan Jarrus, but the other one. What's the kid's name from Rebels?
I don't know.
Kanan Jarrus, and the kid's name was, oh my God, it's killing me. It's not Sabine Wren. I just watched the damn episode. It's too many names, George Lucas. What's wrong with Bob? So anyways, we see Ahsoka Tano grow up. And so she's going to be showing up, if not the next episode, it could be several episodes. There is a lot of rumor that she should be or could be played by the actress Rosario Dawson, who, if you're a listener of this podcast, knows that she showed up in all of the Netflix Marvel shows in Daredevil, Iron Fist, and the like, and that would be incredible. She's a great actress.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be incredible just to have her on this show, and I hope she, I mean, I hope she appears next episode and they keep her on for longer.
No, it's hard to say because they bring Boba Fett in and then we haven't seen him since.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Who knows when they're going to bring this character in, but she's going to make her on-screen debut at some point. So we have, he gets this information, he leaves, he goes back to the frog people's house. There's the child.
They have a tadpole that's gotten bigger.
And the child is infatuated with it and doesn't want to leave, and I thought that was adorable.
I mean,
some people are like, the child wanted to eat that thing.
No.
I don't know. I think at this point, the child saw its birth and
is able to put together
yes.
the difference, theoretically, between intelligent life and a frog hopping on the ground kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, sentient.
And then we go back to the docks. We find out the Razor Crest has been just kind of slapped together.
Mon Calamari repair job.
We have a weird sea creature kind of climbing around.
People seem to think it's one of this a smaller version of the...
The Mama.
Mamacor.
Yes.
What was that?
Mammy.
Mama. Papa. Mama.
So it's climbing around and it's about to attack the baby, and Mando grabs it and kills it, and then we see the baby eating it, the child eating it, and that is the end of our episode.
Yes.
God dang, this was a good episode.
Language, Joel.
Sorry, I went too far.
So yeah, this was incredible. The show is firing all cylinders. Supposedly Jon Favreau wrote or oversaw the whole season as far as the storyline going. So it is all going in one direction, just like most shows. If he's not just the showrunner, I don't know if he's the showrunner or if he's actually the main author.
He's created the, according to the writing credits, he's the creator and the writer.
Okay. I'm sure they have a writing room though. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure Dave Filoni has a lot of say inside of this, like
everything about this though is just Star Wars what you want it to be, and it's not Star Wars where it's just a bunch of man children getting cool guys doing cool stuff, because this is just well-rounded all over the place with sweetness, with comedy, with action. And it's clearly working beyond just you and I and our demographic. It's crossing over all over the place. Everybody, that's what good storytelling does.
And for people who say this is the best Star Wars stuff in the past decade, I still go Rogue One is really a phenomenal movie.
Having some of those member berries?
I am. I absolutely am.
Member red leader.
But as I was watching this is the first time I think I had a little bit last season, but like really felt Star Wars because you have the stormtroopers, you have the Imperial officer, you have the Mandalorian. Like it just felt
the first. Episode. The only thing this felt for me compared to last episode or last season or any episode was this is the one that basically said to me, we are legitimizing Clone Wars all the way. Because up to this point, they keep saying Clone Wars and Rebels and even that Star Wars Resistance show, they're all continuity, and so are the comics. And that's great. You can say that all you want to. But we can also undo it with just the wording saying Lucasfilm says, like, yeah, none of that's continuity anymore because the only thing that really is continuity is live action. And the fact that they're now bringing this in just legitimizes that and just... This episode opened up the show and opened up the world a little bit more. The same way when Moff Gideon showed up and it just opened up, you know, oh, there's a bigger presence, a bigger feeling. And that's what
like
this
Snoke.
One did.
So are you trying to tell me that when the Lego Christmas special comes out, that's even opening up the world even more?
No.
No, oh, okay.
That is a comedy.
Should we podcast on that?
No, God, no.
You don't want a podcast on it?
No, I don't. There's so much Star Wars Lego stuff out there. You get out of here.
It's true there is. But yeah, this is great stuff. We want to know what you thought about it. Feel free to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. Hit us up on Twitter at Bennett Bros Pod, or just send us an email, BennettBrothersPodcast@gmail.com. Always go over to patreon.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. If you enjoy our podcast and you want to help us out, that is the place to do it. And you get exclusive mini cast, which is a bonus for you. And that's exciting. I know. It's awesome. So go there and that helps us out on our end. We really do appreciate it. We appreciate all of our patron members. Awesome. So I think we're going to come back next week and talk about the next episode.
You think so, huh?
I'm pretty sure we are.
That's bold.
Unless no one's clamoring for it. But I did finish Hellstrom, and I'm ready to talk about it. No, I'm not ready to talk about it.
I'm 5 or 6 episodes. I'm dragging through it. It's not terrible, but it's...
so forgettable.
It is. I mean, it's well done. Don't get me wrong. It's well done.
Everything. I think it's well done.
As far as television goes.
As far as television from 10 years ago, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're not... I mean, we'll... when I finish it, if I finish it, we'll talk about it at the end. Just say, like, yeah... I think I just said it right there. Yeah, that was it. I don't think it's going to get any more than that. It just may be more episodes going, yeah, those did the same thing.
Yep. Every episode is the same. Yes, I did. Well, you're off watching 12 new TV shows. I finished the one we can talk about.
I just watched the one where the mom, she confronted the demon that was in her. Yeah.
Sure. Again, they all blend together.
What was the one episode where they have somebody in the padded room and they make them slide and fly into the wall? Which episode?
That was that one, yeah.
Oh, wow, we just diverted. All right, sorry about that, folks.
No, it's okay. Stay tuned every week for the end of the Mandalorian.
At the end, after we do all this stuff, we'll have a Hellstrom moment. It'll be the part. It's the after credits sequence, so it's deep. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Tell your neighbors' neighbors. All right, guys, I'm Jerry.
I'm Joel. We'll talk to you next time.